overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
On January 10th, 2021, as we said at our revealing service this morning, oh, what a week this was. But there was a TV show in the 60s during the Vietnam War. It was called That Was the Week That Was, It's Over, Let It Go. Oh, what a week it was. Now, I don't think we're going to be able to let go anytime soon because we've just started to go through a transition in a country from one form of leadership into another. And until that transition happens, and even beyond, because there was speculation, what's it going to be like in February and March, we get to not know. And there's freedom in not knowing. And then, as I was sharing with one of our beautiful congregants, we can detach but still stay engaged. We're detached because we don't let the outer pull us into the drama and the chaos, but we're still engaged, that we stay informed. And we find out when we can get our vaccination. We stay informed. We find out what's the next step to take as far as being safe on this planet. And we stay informed, and yet we don't spin out in a reactive sort of way. If there was ever a time to practice our spiritual skills, it's now. We cannot stop the winds of change from blowing out here, but we can learn to surf. We can learn to set sail. We can learn to set intentions. And so when life seems to plague us with no seamies and mice in the basement, we can stay engaged, but not give our power to something that's outside of ourselves that's annoying the bejeebies out of us. We can realize that I'm just experiencing my reaction to what is. And then we have this doorway where we can choose how we respond instead of react in this crazy thing that we call our life. Because life is crazy by its very nature, and we're all in it together. And isn't it nice to know that we have a sangha, that we have a community of sane people? And yet there are moments of insanity that we all experience, and we get to witness it. This month of January, I'm pulling out an old friend, which is called The New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And it's the whole premise of this beautiful book is about a shift in consciousness that happens on planet Earth. And he uses this phrase from Revelations. It says, "Behold, there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And the voice within declares, behold, I make all things new." So he goes back to this reference point about the new heaven is the new consciousness that each one of us gets to have. A consciousness of possibility, a consciousness of hope, a consciousness of build back better, whatever that might look like in your life, so that we're coming together in unity and not seeing ourselves as enemies of one another. So that's the new heaven, and then the new earth is how it outpictures in the world. So could we not work from the outside in, but from the inside out? When we have the new consciousness, a consciousness that is our true nature, a consciousness that can find joy in the midst of a pandemic. Are you saying, am I crazy, David? No, I'm not crazy. We started our first class this Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. You're all welcome to dive in at any time. And it's called The Wisdom of the Mystics and the Seven Pathways that they teach. And the first pathway is to know that you're already there, that this center something that holds us grounded in truth and possibility is already there in its fullness. He calls it, Richard Rohr calls it our center. And he says, you don't find the center. He said, the center finds you. I was speaking to my prayer partner in Canada today, and we were both reflecting, right in the midst of a pandemic, when you think that you can't do it, something there sustains you and gets you through it. when you've been through hardship, I know Gigi lived through World War II, and you go through it and the bombs are all around, something in you gets you through it. And so what is that something that's always there in the midst of the chaos, the confusion, the isolation, the fear, the concern? It doesn't mean that those things don't happen. The beloved Sufi poet Rumi, in the midst of his clarity and his oneness with God, he would acknowledge that confusion was there. And so he would not just acknowledge, boy, I'm confused, and we all are to a degree right now on the planet, but he would make it big. He'd say, I am astounded, lucid confusion. I'm very clear that I'm confused right now. And I think we on planet Earth are confused as to what's the next step to take. And yet, from some centered place, from some resolve to create better and harmony and unity, we will take action. And you know, all the great teachers have pointed to the truth, and we reference Jesus a lot, but Jesus would say, by their actions ye shall know them. So what are our actions? Are we being respectful and wearing masks? Are we being conscious when we go to establishments and we say, I'm not going to wear a mask here? Could we see how disrespectful that is to the business that we go to? You know, I go out once a week shopping. It's Wednesday morning, in case anybody wants to know. It's a routine in the family. And we go to Publix, and then we go to Fresh Market, and then we go to Costco, and then we go to Whole Foods, and we shop for the whole week. And every single place we go, we wear the beautiful maskette. And we smile at people with a mask over our faces. And we walk in, and we use the sanitizers on our hand, and we wipe the cart down. And in a strange sort of way, I feel like I'm being a part of the solution and not part of the problem. There's a certain respect and a certain following of the rules which are necessary. I was sharing that Trey had me watch one of these BBC dramas, Anna Karenina, a Leo Tolstoy story of a woman in Russia who fell in love with another man, and it's high drama. She ends up stepping in front of a train at the end of the movie. And it was beautifully done, high drama, but even watching this thing that was so masterful, in the community, what upset everybody about Anna Karenina was that she broke the rules. You don't break the rules in a society that's very rigid and structured and patriarchal, might I add. And patriarchy will trump, in the olden days, you know, what a husband defied as a... And then right after that, last night, Trey had us watching the first Wives Club, and it was about four women who had all been divorced by their husbands for younger women, and they took their power back. So we went from seeing drama around the issue to seeing a comedy around the issue. Could we actually laugh at how we have created such a structure in our world that, in a way, by the ability to laugh at it, we can step out of it and it no longer defines us? Now, in the Center for Spiritual Living, we kind of do that with religions. My favorite song is Imagine No Religion, I Wonder If You Can. Because religions tend to dictate how people should be, and that there are certain rules, and if you don't follow the rules, they could either condemn you to burn in a place of whatever, or they could somehow reject you as not acceptable in that, quote, religion. But if you let go of religion, and which is largely what we do in Centers for Spiritual Living, you find a spirituality that is there behind all religion, and it doesn't require that you be a part of a certain doctrine or belief system. Now imagine the freedom that you could have. You know, Jesus stepped out of the temple. He didn't espouse, he didn't change his religion. He never became a Christian, but he became an awakened Jew. So the opportunity is for each of us to awaken to something greater within ourselves. So we're speaking about a new heaven and a new earth throughout this month, and last Sunday, I spoke about the flowering of human consciousness. And Eckhart Tolle, in that book, he talks about how everything flowers and how the flower is the unfolding of the beauty within all creation. You know, he even says rocks flower. And I thought, rocks flower? And he says, imagine a lump of coal through thousands of years of pressure in the darkness of a cave creates a beautiful diamond. He says, so what if the ruby and the diamond and the sapphire are the flowers of the stones? And so Rumi, in his beautiful metaphorical way of speaking, he says, we need to mine the ruby within ourselves. We need to find that part of us, that gem, that pearl of great price that Jesus spoke about. Remember, it's all metaphor. He says, sell everything for that. So what would be the flowering of human consciousness in your life? How would that look? And just explore that. Stay in the question. The mind is 10 times more active in the question than it is in an answer. So could we be willing to explore and discover that which is inherent within us and let it find us? It will awaken. I was speaking to a dear friend today about following the spiritual path and studying with great spiritual teachers. And maybe when you're young, you need to do that. I know that I apparently did because I studied with a whole slew of them. But ultimately, they all, every single one of them, pointed back here. They would say the outer teacher must, if he's any worth, she's any worth, must take you to this inner teacher. That's that center, something that awakens. But the greatest teacher of all is life. So what if life gives us these 2x4s? And we're all given one right now, so that we can stay engaged, but yet detached enough that we can see it clearly for what it is. Now, when you find a thread of truth that serves you, then let that thread of truth be part of your foundation. And I love seeking them, even at age 72. On my Zen calendar a few weeks ago, I've been quoting Marcus Aurelius, who said there are just two rules. He was a mystic 2,000 years ago, who said the first rule is to have an untroubled spirit. Now you get to ask yourself, when is my spirit untroubled? It's when I'm detached enough to see what's going on all around me, but yet my spirit isn't pulled in by it. I could see them storming the White House, and I could feel all these uncomfortable feelings. But instead of running away from them, I can say these feelings are here for me to feel them, but I'm not letting them consume me. My spirit is still untroubled, even though my mind is going, holy cow, what's happening to our country? This can't be happening, I find myself saying. And then I hear this other voice saying, but it is happening, which is the second rule of Marcus Aurelius, which is see life as it is. Not the way it should be or the way you want it to be, but this is the way it is. Right now, we have a country that's divided against itself. We have two orders of thinking. We're very fractured as a country. So there's a beautiful saying, if you can keep your head while those about you are losing theirs and maybe blaming it on you, then you will have the capacity to face life in a more proactive instead of a reactive way. So this week is the second, and there are 5 Sundays in this month of January, which makes it kind of fun for me. So I've chosen a different book for each week. Rather than teach the book, I can just do a little talk on it, and I can justify spending all the money I do on books. I've got more books than I think Newcastle has coal, and Trey's always wanting me to throw the books out, but they're like my children, they're like my friends. So I'll just leave them in my will to all y'all. But this was a class that I really wanted to teach, but the book kind of depressed me. It's Pema Chodron's book. It's called Welcoming the Unwelcome. And boy, is it needed at this time on the planet. But if you're studying for 8 weeks the unwelcome, in a strange sort of way, you're creating an unwelcome experience. Let's invite everything I don't welcome. Let's invite everything that pushes my buttons. She has a wonderful word for it in Sanskrit. It's the word shempa. What triggers you? All the stuff that gets you off-center. So, in other words, if you want to know how to open your heart, she says, find your broken heart. That's the first step. So I'm going to give you just, I think, the best pearl, which is at the beginning when she sets her intention. And intentions are very powerful because Moses said the words in your mouth are a blessing or a curse according to how you use it. So are you setting an intention to have a more harmonious life? Or are you going to set an intention to wail and suffer and play victim, as our president's doing? If you set an intention, if you declare you're a victim, well, then you become a victim of your own narrative. But if you realize I'm not a victim, and one of the very first things I learned in religious science 40 years ago was there are no victims, there are only volunteers. So are you going to choose to see yourself as a victim of the COVID-19? Or are you going to be courageous enough to say, I'm going to find my way through this thing, and I'm going to be a part of the solution with my friends here at the Center for Spiritual Living. So being that she is a Buddhist nun, she came up with a beautiful phrase. It's a state of consciousness. I used the beautiful German word Gelassenheit last week, which means a consciousness of calm and peace that you carry with you. It was the Apostle Paul, in his speaking to the Thessalonians or whatever those people, he said 3 things. He said, first, do not worry, because worry is a faith in a limited idea. He says the second thing is to find a peace within yourself. That peace will find you. The peace that passes all understanding. It's there right in the middle of the chaos and in the storming of the White House. That peace, you can just touch your heart and feel the peace. It's breathing in and out from you. And then he said the last thing, Apostle Paul said, in all your asking, ask with a grateful heart. So could we start by knowing that we're grateful to be in a spiritual community where we can be there for each other? That we're grateful to have a roof over our heads? My friend in Canada, he shared with me the Canadians are a little bit more ahead of the Americans. He says because they give everyone in Canada who's struggling because of this COVID-19, they give you $2,000 a month so that you can pay for your rent, you can buy your groceries, that you can shelter in place. And he said, he's 73 years old. He said, I got $12,000 in the mail. So he says, I can afford to get off my little boat. He said, it's freezing cold on this little boat in Vancouver Harbor. And he's rented himself a little apartment for 3 months so he can stay warm. Because he has a country that recognizes that people need money to survive during these times. So yeah, see life as it is. We're all going through this together. We're not alone. So Pema Chodron says, there's one state of consciousness that you get to cultivate, and it's called the bodhicitta consciousness. Now, the word bodhi means awakened, and the word citta means, what does the word citta mean? Bodhicitta, I'll give it to you from him, her.
It's an animal.
Say what?
It's an animal that runs fast.
Oh yeah, the cheetah is an animal that runs fast. No, the citta, C-H-I-T-T-A, is the heart-mind. So it's the awakened heart-mind. And she says, when we come from the awakened heart mind, then whatever arises, we welcome it. The COVID-19, an insurrection in the country, a dear friend making their transition. We don't sit there and live in reaction. So here's what she says. She says, Bodhi means awake, citta means heart mind. And our aim is to fully awaken this heart mind, not just for our own greater well-being, but for also to bring a benefit and solace and wisdom to all other beings. What other motivation, she says, could top that? You know, when you awaken the world. In the seven pathways of the mystic path that we're teaching of Richard Rohr, the last pathway is, when I am transformed, I transform the world through my own transformation. So it's never an outside job. You're not there to change the world. You're there to work on yourself. Mm-hmm. And the part of you that is awake is already awake. So could we, as John O'Donohue said, bring that part of our unawakened nature into the awakened part? We all have an unawakened part. You know, the part of us that reacts, the part of us that judges, the part of us that resists. There is no resistance in oneness. So if there is resistance, it's the shempa again. It's that which is triggering me. And it could be something as simple as a no see me. Hey, oh, they're here. They're everywhere. I remember when I was in ninth grade, I was a dramatic person, and I performed at the state competition reading The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. And it's that wonderful story of how he kills somebody and he buries them in the floor, and then all of a sudden he goes crazy, and I can hear the beat of their heart. It's under the floor. And so he goes progressively mad in this dramatic reading, and I just absolutely loved to do it, but I was only in ninth grade, and you know, I felt myself, I had to do The Telltale Heart. I wasn't in bodhicitta consciousness back then. Bodhicitta is the awakened heart, and it begins with the wish to be free from whatever gets in the way of helping others. The bodhicitta is already free, so where are you bound? You know, that's a wonderful question. Where am I caught up in a judgment, in an expectation, in a resistance, in an attachment? All those are pathways for suffering. So could we be ruthless and honest with ourselves? This is where I'm suffering. And then welcome that suffering in. Rumi, I was thinking of him as I was putting this talk together. He says, this being human is like a guest house. And he says, come knocking at the door of our consciousness are the fears and the worries and the resistance and the judgments and the oh, what ifs, what if, what if, what if, what if. And Rumi says, invite them all in and sit them down. They may be coming here to clear your house out for a new greater delight. So if you run away from anything, it runs after you. But if you invite whatever is in, whether it's confusion, whether it's judgment, resistance, in your case, Marie, you know, could I meet my own resistance and know that it's not the truth of me? Huh. You know, there's certain people, when they go to the doctor, they always say, are you allergic to anything? And I have one answer that I always give that I was going to double take from the nurse or the doctor. I says, the only thing I'm allergic to are some people. And they always say, me too. So could we, instead of being allergic to certain kinds of people, could we, in a strange sort of way, invite them in and sit them down? You know, people talk to me about anger, and I was having it with Michael this morning, the talk about anger. And what I've learned in all these years of studying this stuff is that anger is the thinnest mask to hurt. When we're hurt, oftentimes it hurts way too much to touch that hurt, but we can sure get angry. So I think we have a president that's deeply hurt, that he doesn't feel that he was loved or accepted or voted in or somehow wasn't approved of. Instead of getting hurt and showing vulnerability, he has this anger and this kind of wanting to get back. And for me, the way I can help resolve it in my heart is to see that here's a little kid having a tantrum, stomping his feet, he didn't get what he wanted, and this is how it outpictures. That awakens compassion in me, not anger. So that's what she's saying here. Awaken the heart with a wish to be free from whatever is getting in the way of helping others or being an instrument of peace on this planet. He says, we long to be free from our confused thoughts and from our habitual patterns that cover up our own basic goodness so that we can be less reactive and less fearful and less stuck in our own ways. Anybody know anybody who's stuck in their ways? Good, because if you see it, you've got it. And we're all stuck in ways, you know. We're stuck in the way we think we should handle things. I'm married to a man who wants to flee the country. He gets reaction. He was reacting to our Senator Mo Brooks, who was standing on the dais saying it's time to go out and kick some ass in our country. And Trey said, I can't believe he's our senator. So he's now ready to abandon Alabama and leave the state. And I said, honey, you can't run away from anything. But that's, you know, that's... you got to do the best you can. So she goes on to say, we commit to doing all it takes to free ourselves. Commit to doing all it takes to free ourselves completely from all our varieties of confusion and from the unconscious habits and sufferings that we exemplify, because these prevent us from being fully there for others. Could we own our own stuff? Where are you stuck? Who triggers you? They're really there for you. So could we embrace the button pushers? They're showing me my own button. Boy, there's liberation in that. Then we stop making anything wrong. And when we are enlightened, she adds, we will be fully awake to our deepest nature, which is fundamentally an open-hearted and open-minded, a spacious peace and loving presence that's available to all. That's the goal. And it's already there. And we will know this to be true beyond any doubt, beyond any going back. And in this state, we will possess the greatest possible wisdom and skill with which we can benefit others and help them awaken completely in themselves. We have to find it first within ourselves, and then we can find it in another. And she created a little acronym throughout this whole book, and she builds all kinds of exercises on this acronym. And the acronym is LESR. And the L stands for locate where the reaction is in you, where the resistance is in you. Maybe it's in your gut, maybe it's in your neck. With Adam, it's headaches, maybe. With me, it's kind of a feeling sick to my stomach. Maybe there's a... So locate where you're experiencing the shempa, the reaction, the resistance, the judgment. And then she says, E, embrace it. You know, if you have an animal that's afraid, you hold the animal in your arms and you embrace them, and then the fear ultimately abates. If there's a baby crying, you don't put the baby in its crib and let it cry itself to sleep. You pick the baby up and you hold them in their arms. You know, I aspire to that school of raising children. You embrace the boo-boo and you make it better. So you locate where this thing is in you, this something that you don't want, you know, what is it called? The unwelcome. Oh, there's the unwelcome in my neck again, in my judgment, in my fear, in my resistance. There's my resistance. So I locate it, I embrace it, and then the S is I stop telling myself a story about it. The story anchors you in your resistance. Oh yes, let me tell you, I remember as a brand new minister, a woman came up from Birmingham, Alabama. She called me and asked me how much I charged. And she said, oh, what a bargain, I'll be right up. I should raise my prices. So she drove all the way up from Birmingham and she walked into my office at the old center and she had this big book and it was the book of her diseases. And I'm sitting down and I'm thumbing through page after page after page. And I said to her, madam, if you argue for the limited idea, it's yours. She didn't know what I was talking about. I said, if you think this is the truth of you, it becomes the truth of you. And so I called her Bitter Betty from Birmingham. She never came back. I wasn't the one she wanted. I wasn't going to agree with her book of diseases. I said, the truth of you is the wholeness that's inherent underneath that. But she didn't want to hear that. But it's the story that binds you in the problem. So that's what Pema Chodron's. So you locate the issue, you embrace the issue, and then you stop telling a story about it. You know, Jennifer's had to stop telling a story about the husband to free her. It had nothing to do with them. When you stop telling the story, you set yourself free. And then the last one is the R. And she says, remain there. Remain in the place where whatever arises, if it's sadness, if it's confusion, you embrace it, but you're not telling a story about it. You're not. Can you imagine how free Donald Trump would be if he stopped telling the story how they stole the election? He'd be free. And then he could go to Mar-a-Lago and play golf and have a good time. Mm-hmm. You know, and he'd still have his reality show and maybe have a new TV show. And God knows, we'll call it The Apprentice for Losers. No, I'm just goofing with that. When bodhicitta becomes the basis for how we live each day of our lives, then everything we do is meaningful. Then you don't need to go to India to find meaning, because everything is meaningful. Even the raindrops that fall have a meaning. Lastly, she talks about Rinpoche, one of her teachers. I studied with him too. And he said that the way to use bodhicitta was to begin with your own broken heart. So instead of trying to mend, how do you mend a broken heart? No, open to the broken heart. Feel the sadness that Teth's gone, you know? Lisa and I talk regularly. Etika's been gone for 2 years, and she's still feeling the grief of this loss. Isn't that beautiful? And so we can talk about it. And she said, you know, when she first died, I built so much strength up around it that I didn't allow myself to feel vulnerable. I can face this. I don't have to cry. But now there are moments when I'll run into a diary of hers or find an old sweater, and something comes up, and I says, allow that. Allow that. Be gentle with yourself as the grief comes up. So protecting ourselves from pain, our own or that of others, has never worked, she says. Everybody wants to be free from their suffering, but the majority of us go about it in ways that only make things worse. By trying not to feel our feelings, it gets worse. So could we open to the sadness and the grief? I love watching shows that make me cry, and there was one called Prom. It's on Netflix, I think. And it's about a young girl. It's a true story, based on a true story. A young girl from Indiana who wanted to go to the prom, but she was denied that right because she was a lesbian. She's 15 years old. And so everybody treated her like dirt in the school. And so these actors from New York decided to come out to Indiana, where Mike Pence is from, where gay people aren't particularly popular. In this true story, they were fighting for her right to go to the prom. And she sang a little song. She's 15 years old. And she sang song to her little girlfriend. She said, I just want to dance with you. 15 years old, innocent as they could be. I just want to dance with you at the prom. And as she's singing that song, tears are coming down my face because I could relate. Because I was the little gay boy that never got to go to the prom to be who he was. And so these things come up when they come up, even at 72. Trey said, you're sitting there crying like a baby. I said, yeah, because I felt what that young girl was feeling when she said, I just want to dance with you. She didn't want to do something outrageous. So it doesn't help to deny those feelings. Everybody wants to be free from their suffering, but the majority of us go about it the wrong way. Shielding ourselves from our own vulnerability is the worst thing we could do. It cuts us off from a full experience of our own life. So when we touch the bodhicitta, that beautiful, loving presence, by simply allowing ourselves to experience our raw feelings without getting sucked into them, by telling a story of thoughts and stories and locking ourselves in them. For instance, when I'm feeling lonely, I can blame myself and get all upset, or I can fantasize about how nice it would be to have someone to spend time with, but I could also have the opportunity to simply touch that loneliness, touch that feeling, and discover there's a bodhicitta in the middle of it all. It's right there in my own vulnerable heart, and I can realize that my own loneliness is no different from the loneliness of everyone that this planet experiences. And by touching that loneliness, I've come home to myself. So the whole premise of this lovely book is to, instead of trying to get rid of the stuff that we don't welcome, to welcome it in. Which leads me to, a discussion of what they call the middle way in Buddhism. The middle way is the path. It's like the razor's edge that it's very difficult to watch. And on the middle path, you don't push away stuff that you don't like. In other words, you welcome it in. Nor do you grasp at stuff that you want. I want this, I want that. You don't grasp and you don't push away. You just walk that middle path. And that's the path of freedom. And then by right of consciousness, the stuff that's warm and fuzzy, it will come to you by right of consciousness. You know, the hummingbird will find you in the bedroom. The puppy dogs will come running to you. My friend Adam, he comes over and the dogs have fallen in love with him. They'd fall in love with anybody, trust me. And the pug, he's had the herniated disc and he's not allowed to, well, he can't climb or go down the stairs because he was crippled. But when he saw Adam the other day, he starts running down the stairs. And I'm freaking out. The pug's going to fall on his head and he's going to go tumbling down and he'll be paralyzed. And Adam goes charging up the stairs. He scoops the little black pug up in his arms and comes down and all is well. You see the power of love when it's in action, how it, and you welcome it, even when it's ignorant. So my friend Matt Kahn, he wrote a book, and this is much easier to teach. Whatever arises, love that, whatever arises. It's the same idea of welcoming the unwelcome. Just love it. It's here for you. It's not here against you. Huh. So what Jesus said, you know, love your enemy. He said, oftentimes we make an enemy. We project the enemy out there on something we don't understand. The president has projected the enemy about, oh, all kinds of left-wingers. You're probably all the enemy, right? But could we love the enemy? Could we bring them in? And so in loving what is, he has a very simple, not quite so Buddhist way of approaching it, which I wanted to share with you. He says, whatever arises, whatever, he says, love it. He says, by loving what arises, you unearth the deepest understanding of the universe in the most heart-centered way. Huh. Whatever arises, love that. Because you're taking it to the love of the universe. You're taking it to the eternal embrace. So we're going through a coronavirus. You know, I remember when my friend Kim Brown, when she had cancer, and I said, what advice would you give my other friend who contracted cancer? She'd say, love the cancer. So many people approach cancer by fighting it. But she said, why do you want to have war going on in your body? So if you bring love to this thing that you're experiencing, then you can love it and let it go. I no longer need you. You came to show me something. I'm going to claim the gift and then I'm going to let you go. You know, I had a heart attack to show me maybe where I was blocked. So instead of going at war with my heart, could I love my heart and place my hands? Maybe I didn't listen to you. I think I was getting messages for many years and I wasn't listening to them. So I made a vow to my heart, I'm going to listen to you now when you give me a message. I'm not going to deny you anymore. When my little inner child that had been abandoned and rejected and shamed, when he came up, and boy, was he a mess, and he had tears, and he had a story, and he basically said, just don't abandon me again. Now that I've come up, let me be a part of you. So whatever arises, love that. And it may not be comfortable what arises. So Matt Kahn goes on, he says this, he says, best of all, when love can be invited to work through us and respond on our behalf, we don't even need to know why things occur. Just this is here, this is too is good, this too is for God. I demand to see the blessing. I know that love is right at the core of whatever arises. All that is required is a willingness to open our heart. Boy, how simple is that? He says, with every step forward into the new spiritual paradigm, you are able to celebrate the arrival of heart-centered consciousness while holding a sacred space for the ascension of earth and the awakening of humanity. We're all going through this together. A big thing Eckhart Tolle speaks about in the New Earth is we are in a collective evolution of consciousness. So could we hold how crucial our space is in that? How can I expect the world to awaken if I'm not going to take responsibility for my role in that? Because we contagion each other, because we are each other. So she says that. She says the same thing. It's for the ascension of Earth and the awakening of humanity. The importance of cultivating unconditional love is an essential stage in the completion of our journey. So what if our job isn't to become enlightened? It's just to be loving. It's the essential part of our journey, he says. Whether manifesting a soulmate, healing our body, seeking liberation from suffering, or integrating past realizations into a fully embodied state of being, each spiritual milestone swiftly finds its way to you once love has been invited into your life. Once you invite love into your life, everything is added unto you. Jesus said, seek the kingdom and everything else will be added. The kingdom is already here. So instead of going out and seeking the right mate or seeking the right career or seeking the right guru, find it's right there. And once you find this, everything is added unto you. Lastly, he says, this is the dawning of our highest potential on planet Earth. It is the emergence of your soul into the beauty of human form. The emergence, feel into that, the emergence of your soul into the beauty of your human form. In our class on mysticism, it says our divinity manifests through our humanity. So could we not separate them, put God out here and human down here, but could we weave them together and let our humanity be divinely inspired? It is the long-awaited fulfillment of your divine destiny. We were talking about our destiny. If you're destined, and we're all destined to awaken, every one of us. And so if you found yourself here sitting in a chair, this is your destiny. It was destiny that I would meet Michael George. You know, and you know, my friend Michael Beckwith says, people come into our centers sometimes for a reason, sometimes for a season, and sometimes for a lifetime. So you can ask yourself, am I committed to a lifetime of evolution, or am I just going to have a little glimpse and then go back to my forgetful asleep ways and go back into the suffering of my story and make it all about me? My prayer partner says they have little Velcro things where they put them on their in their church and people can go around like this. If you can goof on it, you can set yourself free. It is the long-awaited fulfillment of your divine destiny that's awakening. And for the spiritual growth of all who inhabit this magnificent planet, he calls this a love revolution that must begin with us. And he says it is always beginning in every moment. Could you wake up every day and know that this thing is beginning in me? The only begotten is ever begetting itself in me right now. Meister Eckhart. Huh. They excommunicated him after he died because they said this is heresy to say that the only begotten, which we only give to Jesus, is ever begetting itself in me and you. So could we find that something that is awakening, the, whatever you want to call it, love, the bodhicitta, the awakened heart, the Christ consciousness, the Buddha consciousness? It's so funny. I wanted to close with Jeff Foster because he did more for me than probably any teacher through his example, because he got lost. He experienced more traumas than any human being that I can think of, but it was the traumas that woke him up. So by embracing the trauma, he got the awakening. Last week I shared about the story of the dogwood and how the dogwood wouldn't bloom, and how horticulturists say oftentimes a plant has to be really stressed in order for it to bloom, you know? And so this friend of mine, she went out with her hose and started beating on the dogwood. Boy, that year it was in full bloom. So what if the stress that we're going through is equal to the shift in our awakening? The traumas that we go through are sacred traumas. So here's Jeff Foster speaking about welcoming the traumas in your life. Listen to this, Bubba Jake. He said, a wound is a portal, and it will not kill you when you turn toward the portal. I have known horrors within myself that have pushed me to the edge of sanity, the edge of mortality. And I have touched into a grief that is so unbearable that it felt like my heart couldn't hold on for one more second. And I have felt rage that is so volcanic that it could destroy or create an entire cosmos. But moment by moment, he says, I was able to bear the unbearable because I welcomed the unwelcome. And I accepted the unacceptable. And I fell in love with my own inner enemy. The enemy within that's creating all the suffering, that has the story. An enemy that turned out to be, after all, an innocent inner child within myself that was screaming and raging for my own love. That was my own direct experience. There was a little boy in me that I had abandoned years ago who wanted to be included. And so he said, my own flesh and blood, not an enemy or an alien, but simply a part of myself. This understanding has changed my life forever. So instead of exiling him, I welcomed this unwelcome part of myself. At the core of my deepest trauma, I saw my own kind face was smiling back at me. And I found power and courage that I never knew that I had by meeting the unwelcome. And I found the ultimate safety. I found God herself, that she had used my deepest wounds, which were her own wounds, to call me back to myself, to herself, and to restore me to wholeness, no longer separate. And he says, your trauma is a black hole, and it will suck the life out of you and of everyone else around you if you try to run away from it. Anybody can relate to that? Oy vey. But trauma can also be a quasar, an astonishing dynamo of a new life, fueled by its blackness, emitting more light than 20 galaxies. So out of the darkness, light, it says in the Bible, and out of the pain, joy, and out of the alchemical fire of this life that we're living comes the gold of our experience. And he lastly compares this to the Buddha. And you know, we think of the Buddha as this awakened consciousness within us, but Jeff Foster takes a little spin on it, and he says there is a wild Buddha that's in all of us. Not just this calm, but it's the astounded, lucid, confusion Buddha that's within you. And he says, the more you run from the wild Buddha, the more she will run after you. So he says, we all must eventually turn to face this wild one that's inside of us. The unwelcome one that's inside of us. And become curious about our natural feelings and urges and impulses, both the pleasurable ones and the painful ones, both the gentle and the intense ones, and give them the gift of our mindful attention and breathe. Adam was listening to some Thich Nhat Hanh this morning, and he was talking about peeling an orange and being present with an orange, the mindful moment. He said the same thing, just be present with whatever is arising within you. Peel it away. And he says, give them the gift of your mindful attention and your breath, and give them your love and your understanding, and give these parts of yourself a permanent home in yourselves, a place where they can roam freely. And when we befriend our own wildness, then we can befriend it in others. When we befriend our own wildness. The Buddha sobbed like a baby sometimes. He felt righteous anger at the injustice and the abuse within his world. He feared death, but stood steadfastly at the heart of fear. Here was the source of the Buddha's power, an infinite and unbreakable love for the wildness that was inside and all around. So could we embrace this life with all its wildness, with all its chaos, with all its pain, with all its sadness, and know that right in the center of it is this bodhicitta, is this presence, is this liberated something that we all share. So let me do a little closing meditation. And I hear that beautiful L-E-S-R. To locate where you are right now in this holy instant, wherever you are, you might be going through some resistance in your life. There might be some confusion. Maybe there's some sadness. There's a lot of sadness on the planet right now. There's the collective energy that a friend of mine was reminding. He said, I'm feeling the collective on the planet. So locate whatever it is that's happening in your life, whatever vulnerable place might be there, and embrace it. Or love it, if you would. To love that which is showing you, this is my resistance, this is my anger, this is my sadness, the wild Buddha within you, and we're meeting it. And now let's let go of any story that we might be carrying around that felt awareness. It's not the truth of me. I don't have to become a permanent victim of my story. But just by staying present with what is, right at the core of it, right at the core of it, there is a stillness. There is a peace. There is an undisturbed spirit. And so with a grateful heart, I allow that center within to claim my awareness, that peaceful place on the middle path that isn't pushing anything away anymore, that's not grasping and wanting, but that just simply is abiding in present moment awareness, witnessing what life is showing, and finding that there is a gift in there, there is a flowering of human consciousness within whatever arising, because I'm welcoming the unwelcome, I'm no longer pushing it away. And in that, there is freedom to accept life as it is, to face this country going through this seemingly troubled transition, and yet I am carrying the consciousness of hope and peace and possibility by my actions and by my knowing. Wayne Dyer spoke about the power of intention as the most powerful thing we can do is to set an intention. And so I invite you to set an intention for yourself so that you might carry this into the world as the outpicturing in the new earth. there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And so we get to design this new heaven, this state of consciousness that we choose to operate from, knowing that this outer earthly world will reflect back who we are. Ralph Waldo Emerson says, "What you are speaks so loudly." And so could we let what we are speak so loudly? Could we be the example of peace on earth and goodwill toward all? Could we be the example of a peace that passes all understanding? Could we let joy be our compass and let joy help us navigate in this world where people are masked and where they still don't have a vaccine available to so many of us? Could we find peace in all of this by embodying that peace, by taking up refuge in that peace, and then by transmitting it to the world? All of life is a transmission. There is a transmitter, there is a receiver, and there is that which is transmitted. Could we be that transmission of love? So whatever arises, we as love embrace it. The world doesn't have to change then, because it's received at this center space that we all share by a divine, unconditional love of the universe, and we are that. Tatwam Asi, thou art that. Thou art the love of the universe unfolding in space and time, the illusion of time, and the unlimitedness of space. So take a deep breath. Give a sigh for the divine. Place your hands over your heart. And join with me in the heart salutation together by saying, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of myself.
You are the deepest aspect of myself.
In this shared place of intimacy,
we are one.
And then in true octopus teacher fashion, open your tentacles to the world. Let your tentacles move, knowing that the world understands the wisdom of the octopus, and you are that, and so am I. Thank you for sending in your tithes. Happy New Year. I love you all. Put on your masks.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.